भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टतृषामेष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः. This is Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're on Canto 8, Chapter 12, entitled Mohini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva, and today's text is number 8. Tvam Brahma Purnam Amritam Vigunam Vishokam Anandamatram Avikaram Ananyat Anyat Vishvasya Hetuh Udaya Sthiti Sanyamanam Atmeshwarah Cha Tad Apekshataya Anapekshah Tvam Brahma Purnam Amritam Vigunam Vishokam. Ananda Matram Avikaram Ananyat Anyat Vishvasya Heturudaya Sthiti Sanyamanam Atmeshwarascha tadapeksha dayanapeksha. Tvam Brahma Purnam Amritam Vigunam Vishokam. Ananda Matram Avikaram Ananyat Anyat. Vishvasya heturudaya sthiti sanyamanam Atmeshwarascha tadapeksha dayanapeksha. Tvam Brahma Purnam Amritam Vigunam Vishokam. Ananda Matram Avikaram Ananyat Anyat. Vishvasya Heturudaya Sthuti Samyamanam. Atmeshwarascha Tadapeksha Dayanapeksha. Tvam Brahma Purnam Amritam त्वं ब्रह्म पूर्णमृतं विगुणं विशोकम् आनन्दमात्रवमिविकारमनन्यरन्यात् विश्वस्य हेतुहृदयस्थितिसंयमानम् आत्मेश्वरश्च तदपेक्षतयानपेक्षः आनन्दमात्रमविकारमनन्यदन्यात् विश्वस्य हेतुहृदयस्थितिसंयमानाम् आत्मेश्वरश्च तदपेक्षतयानपेक्षः विशोकम् Ladies, Tvam Brahma Purnam Amritam Vigunam Vishokam Anandamatram Vikaram Ananyadanyat Vishvasya Heturudaya Sthiti Sanyamanam आत्मेश्वरश्च तदपेक्षतयानपेक्षः त्वं ब्रह्म पूर्णममृतं विगुणं विशोकम् आनन्दमात्रमविकारमनन्यदन्यात् विश्वस्य हेतुहृदयस्थितिसंयमानाम् आत्मेश्वरश्च तदपेक्षतयानपेक्षः त्वं ब्रह्म पूर्णममृतं विगुणं विशोकम् आनन्दमात्रमविकारमनन्यदन्यात् विश्वस्य हेतुहृदयस्थितिसंयमानाम् आत्मेश्वरश्च तदपेक्षतयानपेक्षः त्वं यु Your Lordship, Brahma, the all-pervading absolute truth, Purnam, fully complete, Amritam, never to be vanquished, Vigunam, spiritually situated, free from the material modes of nature. Vishokam, without lamentation. Anandamatram, always in transcendental bliss. Avikaram, changeless. Ananyat, separated from everything. Anyat, yet you are everything. Vishvasya, of the cosmic manifestation, Hetoho, the cause, Udaya, of the beginning, Sthiti, maintenance, Sanyamanam, and of all the directors, controlling the various departments of the cosmic manifestation. Atma Ishwaraha, the Supersoul, giving direction to everyone. Cha, also, Tad Apekshataya, everyone depends upon you. Anapekshaha, always fully independent. Translation by Srila Prabhupada, my Lord, you are the Supreme Brahman, complete in everything. Being completely spiritual, you are eternal, free from the material modes of nature, and full of transcendental bliss. Indeed, for you, there is no question of lamentation. Since you are the supreme cause, the cause of all causes, nothing can exist without you. Yet, we are different from you, in a relationship of cause and effect. For in one sense, the cause and effect are different. You are the original cause of creation, manifestation, and annihilation, and you bestow benedictions upon all living entities. Everyone depends upon you for the results of his activities, but you are always independent. Now I'm going to begin from the very beginning. On the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the oldest commentator, Sridhar Swami. I'm going to go through the major commentaries from Sridhar Swami up until the present moment, because I think that, especially in this verse, that will give us a much deeper appreciation of what Srila Prabhupada has written here in his own purport, which I'll read after that. So, Sridhar Swami says, he raises this doubt that Krishna might ask, if I'm Brahman only, then what is the use of worshipping my lotus feet? Because in the previous verse, we heard this yesterday. Tasyaiva charanam bhojam shreyas kama nirashishaha visrujyo bhayataha sangam muniyaha samupasate. Pure devotees, or great saintly persons who desire to achieve the highest goal in life, and who are completely free from all material desires for sense gratification, constantly engage in the transcendental service of your lotus feet. And now today we're talking about Brahman, and there are 7 or 8 adjectives that describe Brahman. His Purnam, his Amritam, his Vigunam, his Vishokam, his Anandamatram, his Avikaram, his Ananyat, but at the same time his Anyat. These are all the things. So, Sridhar Swami writes, to deal with those who wonder like this, that if Krishna is to be taken as Brahman only, then what's the use of worshipping his lotus feet? Therefore he uses this word first, Tvam. And what does Tvam mean? You, your lordship. Though you exist only in spirit, Brahman, you aren't absolutely detached or independent, but are the cause of universal variegatedness, such as creation and so forth. And you're the Lord who awards fruits to the souls, conditioned souls, the jivas. So Krishna might ask about this, that so do I give results like some king who is dependent on his subjects? Because a king is actually dependent on his subjects. Without subjects, a king has no meaning. So is Krishna like that? No, no, no. You expect nothing at all. Or you require nothing at all. The word here used is apeksha. Or in the verse, it's anapeksha. Means that he's not waiting for anybody. He's not dependent on anybody. He doesn't require anybody. Therefore, he doesn't expect anybody. He's got no result to consider, and he's got no motive to achieve. This is Krishna's unique position. So, then he explains the point about him being the Lord. The idea expressed here is that he expects nothing through those jivas who worship him, but rather he gives them whatever the results they've desired. Paladatta. He specifies his non-different identity with Brahman only to demonstrate his independence. The phrase Purnam Amritam means that his form is pure happiness, Sukharupam, which intends that he isn't characterized by material sense gratification. And he's Avikaram. Avikaram means changeless. But Sridhar Swami here glosses this as that Avikaram indicates that he is full of only bliss. That's stated here as Anandamatram. So how is that so? How is it that he's full of bliss and independent? Because a person who's already full of bliss, he has nothing to gain from anyone else. So how is it? He answers, this is because he's free of grief, Vishokam. The next adjective in the line is Vishokam. Why is he Vishoka, or without suffering? Because he's devoid of the modes of material nature, Vigunam. And what about Ananyat? Ananyat means not something else. The idea here is that he's not independent from that which he's not independent of that from which nothing is separate. In other words, on account of the non-existence of anything other than Brahman, he's not independent. So regarding his all-pervasiveness, he explains, his association with any and all things is difficult to overcome. It's in fact impossible. On account of there being nothing, his having no distinction from everything. Everything is related to him. He's the cause of everything. Therefore, he's necessarily connected to everything. So he's not independent in that way. Nor are you dependent on something other than your self-same spiritual form, composed of innate bliss. Therefore, the purport here is that your majesty is only for the devotee's sake and not for your own purpose. He has no purpose to fulfill. This is what the Shvetashvatara Upanishad tells us. Natasya karyam karanam chavidyate. Karyam means something that you have to do. Just like we have to go to work, otherwise we cannot pay our bills and we starve. We have to do it. So Krishna, there's nothing that he has to do. So therefore, all this majesty that he has at his command, it's actually only meant for devotional service. It's only meant for him to do something for his devotees and for his devotees to take and do something for him. That's the only need. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur then, he also gives his own comment on this verse. He says, the reason is that your form is distinct from this universe. Brahman is spiritual and the universe, on the other hand, is material. The other words are adjectives describing Brahman. You're full and the universe is incomplete. So Purnam, Krishna alone is Purnam, he's full. Just like we hear from the Ishopanishad, he's Purnam. But this universe, on the other hand, is Apurnam. The universe has material elements, like the three modes, gunas. The universe also has lamentation. It has happiness and distress. And it's also subject to change. You don't have any of these flaws. There's nothing except Brahman, Ananyat, because Brahman is the cause of everything. Thus it's different, Ananyat, from the universe. Because the universe is not even conscious, Brahman is different from the universe. The universe being but an effect of Brahman. Brahman is the cause of the appearance, maintenance, and destruction of the world. You are the Lord of the Jivas conditioned by the universe and the giver of results to them. So he again raises this rhetorical question. Am I like a king who gives results to those who serve with some dependence on them? No, not at all. They depend on you, and that is all you expect from them. You give results according to their dependency. You do not depend upon them. They are dependent on you in order to attain their results, but you do not depend on them for fulfilling your own goals. Now, let's see what Srila Prabhupada does with this information. His translation is, my Lord, you are the Supreme Brahman, complete in everything. Being completely spiritual, you are eternal, free from the material modes of nature, and full of transcendental bliss. Indeed, for you there is no question of lamentation. Since you are the supreme cause, the cause of all causes, nothing can exist without you. Yet we are different from you in a relationship of cause and effect. For in one sense, the cause and effect are different. You are the original cause of creation, manifestation, and annihilation, and you bestow benedictions upon all living entities. Everyone depends on you for the results of his activities, but you are always independent. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani nachaham teshwavastitaha. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them. This explains the philosophy of oneness and difference, known as achintya bheda bheda. Everything is the Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead. Yet, the Supreme Person is differently situated from everything. Indeed, because the Lord is differently situated from everything material, he is the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Cause, the Supreme Controller. In other words, it's because the Lord is different that he's the Supreme. If he was just another conditioned soul, then no need to worship his lotus feet. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. The Lord is the Supreme Cause, and his form has nothing to do with the modes of material nature. Now Prabhupada adds, the devotee prays, as your devotee is completely free from all desires, your lordship is also completely free from desires. You are fully independent. Although all living entities engage in your service, you do not depend on the service of anyone. Although this material world is created complete by you, everything depends on your sanction. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Matta Smritir Jnanam Apohanam Cha. That's 15:15. Remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness come from you. Nothing can be done independently, yet you act independently of the service rendered by your servants. The living entities depend upon your mercy for liberation. But when you want to give them liberation, you do not depend on anyone else. Indeed, by your causeless mercy, you can give liberation to anyone. Those who receive your mercy are called Kripa Siddha. To reach the platform of perfection takes many, many lives. Bahunam Janmanam Antik Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate, Bhagavad Gita 7:19. Nonetheless, even without undergoing severe austerities, one can attain perfection by your mercy. Devotional service should be unmotivated and free from impediments. Ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. This is the position of nirashishaha, or freedom from expectations for results. A pure devotee continuously offers transcendental, loving service to you, but you may nonetheless offer mercy to anyone without depending on his service. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarnam Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Ivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. First of all, we can put this verse into context. Lord Shiva has said several things here. In two or three verses, he states what he has to say about Krishna. In the next five or so verses, he gives the reasons, beginning with this verse. The reasons why he has made this conclusion that all advanced saintly personalities worship his lotus feet. And now he's beginning to unpack this assertion. We should be attentive when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam and look at hints that we get here and there. Just like when there's a change in meter. Today we've changed from the shloka meter, or anushtub meter, to the meter called Vasanta Tilak, which you sing like Brahma Samhita, longer meter. Whenever the meter changes, it's usually kind of a shift in the presentation. So that's one thing. He's beginning to explain his reasoning for making the conclusion that he's making. And the first point that he's making is that you are a person, and you are non-different from this Brahma at the same time. You're full of nectar. Amrita means deathless. Deathless means nectar. And Purnam Amritam, Purnamrita Svadhanam, is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has similarly said. The Lord is full. He's the full nectar that we all seek after. And he's full in himself. Therefore, he has nothing to gain from anyone else. And Sridhar Swami and others, they give this progression. Why is he full of this bliss, anandamatram, avikaram, changeless? Because he's vishokam. He's without any suffering. He's free from suffering because he's not influenced by the modes. The reason he's not influenced by the modes is because he's anyat. He's something else than this material creation. And yet, at the same time, he's not something else. He's ananyat. This is the idea. So these are the adjectives that are being described here. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he's made some very, very interesting points in his purport. And those who are listening attentively can see the relationship with what's been stated by his predecessors. But Prabhupada expands it, as he often does. And the first thing he adds here, he's quoting from Bhagavad Gita, by me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. I'm not in them, but they are all in me. And Prabhupada points out that this is what we call a chintya bhedabhed. You can say ananyat and anyat at the same time, even though these are contradictory terms, because the absolute truth enables all contradictions. It harmonizes all contradictions. How is that so? Through his inconceivable potency, achintya shakti. So this is the first thing that Prabhupada points out here. Then he explains, he's paraphrasing what the predecessor acharyas that have said. Indeed, he's the Supreme Lord because he's differently situated. If he was in the material world, he wouldn't be the Supreme Lord. And that means he's the Supreme Controller, Ishvara Paramakrishna. As the Supreme Controller, he's the one who fulfills the desires of all living beings. What does the Shruti Mantra tell us about this? Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetananam, eko bahunam yo vidithati kaman. There's only one of us. We're all eternal. We're all conscious. But only one of us, conscious, eternal living beings, is fulfilling the desires of all the others. Therefore, he's God. This is the idea. And because he is in this unique position, he has nothing to expect from anyone. He has no reason to accept service from anyone because he's not lacking in anything. Therefore, he does it only to reciprocate in love with anyone who chooses to love him. This is the idea. So, Prabhupada is now presenting a hypothetical devotee who prays, just as the devotees are freed from material desires, your lordship is also completely free and therefore independent. Although we all worship you, you don't depend on any of us. Although this material world is created by you, it ultimately still depends upon your sanction. Nothing can be done independently. Everything depends on you, but you alone are independent, even of the service rendered by your servants. There's a nice verse given by Rupa Goswami. I think it's in, I don't remember where it is, but he says, even I may appreciate your position and I may offer you wonderful prayers of glorification, still, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to fulfill my desire. This is what it means. We may ardently worship Krishna very sincerely, and we may be following all the orders of the spiritual master,
And still Krishna doesn't have to give his mercy if he doesn't want to, for his own inscrutable reasons. That's a hard pill to swallow. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport here. A pure devotee continuously offers transcendental loving service to you, but you may, nonetheless, offer mercy to anyone without depending on his service. Sometimes we find. There's one famous story. Prabhupada was in an airplane, and he was taking this puffed rice that we all like to eat. And the stewardess walks by, and she looks at Prabhupada, and she looks at what he's eating, and she grabs a handful of what Prabhupada was eating, and she pops it in her mouth. Are there any airlines that train their stewardesses to behave in this manner? Therefore, it has to be something that's simply spontaneously inspired from Paramatma within the heart. Causeless mercy. What is the reason? Did she do anything? How can we say? Somehow or other. And I'm told, actually, that this person, later on, devotees found her in Mexico. She became a devotee. She was a Mexican stewardess. Pious. Anyway, she, not initiated devotee, but she's chanting Hare Krishna and following the principles. She's ISKCON congregational member. So that's called Kripa Siddha. Actually, if you think about it, there's only Kripa Siddha. You know, sometimes we talk about Sadhana Siddha. Of course, there's Nitya Siddhas. These are the devotees who are eternally associated with Krishna, Nitya Parishads. They never fall down into this material world. They never forget Krishna and never leave the spiritual world. But among those who do, there are two kinds who can go back to Godhead. One is called Sadhana Siddha. They've very carefully followed all the processes, all the Shastric injunctions. They've accepted the guidance of bona fide spiritual master and good association with devotees. And gradually they've become purified. Here Prabhupada says this generally takes many, many lifetimes. Many, many lifetimes. He's quoting Bhagavad Gita to back it up. That's called Sadhana Siddha. But even Sadhana Siddha is actually only Kripa Siddha. Why? Guru Kripa, bina nahi koi sadhan bal. Your spiritual practice will not have any potency without mercy from the spiritual master. Or you will not even have the strength to perform your spiritual practices without mercy from the spiritual master, however you want to take it. Therefore, it's still Kripa Siddha. But sometimes we see, in rare cases, a person is just the most unlikely candidate. Even, may be just spontaneously blessed. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, we hear of these Pathan Vaishnavas. They were constables of the government, and they found Chaitanya Mahaprabhu unconscious underneath a tree in Brajadham. And he was surrounded by his associates, so they, thinking the way that policemen think, they immediately calculated that these men have somehow given him some poison and they've tried to rob him or something like that. There's something funny going on here. So they arrested them all. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to, then he gave them his mercy also. And they became Vaishnavas just by happening to walk by and seeing the devotees in this position. Shall I tell you an even more colorful story? Okay. In the literature of the Vallabha Vaishnava Sampradaya, Pushti Marga, it's called Dosau Bhavana Vaishnavan Kivarta in Brijbhasha. There's a story of another Pathan Vaishnava, Muslim. His name was Ras Khan. Ras Khan he's described in this book. It's very strongly implied that he was what we would call in modern language a child molester. He was following around one Hindu boy he was rendering every service to this boy, and he was even taking his remnants and just completely infatuated with one Hindu boy. Now, one day in Delhi, where he lived, he was on the street, and there was a small group of Vaishnavas nearby, and they were talking about the beauty of Sri Govardhananathji, Srinathji. who is now worshipped in Rajasthan, used to be worshipped atop Govardhan Hill. That deity was worshipped actually by Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri established the temple of Gopal atop Govardhan Hill, and this is none other than the same, Srinathji. So in those days, this is 16th century, Brajatham, or North India, Central India. It was a very unstable political climate, and especially for Vaishnavas, you never really knew what the future was. You might have to flee with your deity at any time. Therefore, sometimes devotees used to carry the deity with them at all times. Or, because there are eight forms of the deity that we worship, one of which is a picture, they would often have a small picture of a deity. Not even a deity, but a small picture, and they would keep it concealed within their pagri, within their turban. So one devotee was like this. So they, a small group of devotees were on the street, and they were talking about Krishna and Krishna's beauty. And Raskhan just happened to be walking by, and he overheard these devotees talking about this beautiful young boy named Krishna. So the devotee pulled this picture out of his hat, and he was showing it to the other devotees. And Raskhan comes up and says, "Hey, I want to see too." And so the devotees began to get a little nervous because, you know, Raskhan is a... Anyway, so... Anyway, the devotee showed him this picture. Now, the picture happened to be, in different times of the seasons and in different times of the day, the deity's dress is changed, just like we have the same system we have in our temple. In the summertime, the deity will not wear very many clothing. In the wintertime, they wrap them up. Especially in Vrindavan, it gets very cold. You see the deities are bundled up. If you go to Mangalarati in the dead of winter in Vrindavan, you'll see Sri Radharaman with dressed in completely in woolens. They have these knitted woolen... He's got a knitted woolen ski cap, and he's got a bagalbandi, and he's got woolen pants, and he's even got little moja. Moja means socks. And mittens, even. So he's all, and he looks absolutely adorable in that form. At in the summertime, on the other hand, Sri Radharaman, or the other deities, sometimes he's only wearing just one slight cloth around his waist, bus. So such was the picture that Raskhan saw. He saw this deity of Krishna, and Krishna's not hardly wearing anything at all, only his beautiful form, his Purnam Amritam form. Sukharupam, as Sridhar Swami has described, Anandamatra Vapu, form of complete bliss, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. So Raskhan became immediately entranced. He became immediately fascinated and obsessed. He said, "I've got to see this boy." And so the Vaishnavas told him that, no, you cannot have this picture. This is my worshipful deity. How do you explain this to a Muslim? So Raskhan took out his talwar. Talwar means a sword. And the Vaishnavas started to tremble. They what to do now? And so they told him, no, you can surely see this boy if you go to Vrindavan. Go to Brajdham. He lives there. His name is Nandalal. You just ask around, you'll find him. And there's so many temples they've built for him there. You will find him. You just go there and look. On the spot, Raskhan left everything and went straight to Vrindavan. And he's considering the picture, and then he's looking at the deity, and he's trying to make a calculation. Is this the same person? No, not this one. Goes on to the next temple. No, not this one either. Finally, he exhausted every temple in Vrindavan until he came to Govardhan. And he saw the Gopalji temple atop Govardhan Hill. It's still there. For those who have done Govardhan Parikrama, you know there's a big white building on top of the hill just above Sankarsana Kund, Aniyor, and it's got two pyramids on it. That's the Srinathji's old temple. It's empty now. But the Lord used to be living there. So Raskhan saw this temple and he thought, let me go there. So he waited for the darshan. As soon as he saw there was a crowd of pilgrims going up, he mingled into the crowd and he started walking also. When he got to the hill, he got to the doorway, entrance of the door. He was trying to walk in, and then suddenly a big arm came down and stopped him. It was the temple chokidar, the temple guard. And he said, no Muslims allowed. Sorry, you have to go out. So Raskhan was crestfallen. He thought, I've checked every temple in Vrindavan. Tirtha Yatra Kiya. He's done the Tirtha Yatra. So I've checked every temple in Vrindavan and I've not found. I know he's got to be in there. It has to be this one because those Vaishnavas said he's living here. So what will I do now? So then he's sitting down and he's fasting. For 3 days, he's sitting at the foot of Govardhan Hill at Govindakund with his head in his hands, just mulling over the situation and praying. My dear Lord, please somehow just arrange this meeting. So Krishna, being the remover of his devotee's distress, he appeared to the son of Vallabhacharya. His name was Vitaleshwara Goswami. You know, especially caste Goswamis, after lunch, what do? Left side down. So he was lying down taking rest. And in his dream, Srinadji came and said, "Hey, wake up. There's a Daivi Jiva waiting for you at Govindakund." What does Daivi Jiva mean? Divine soul. He's ready for this bhakti. He looks like an ordinary Muslim Pathan, but actually he's a Daivi Jiva. You go and save him. Because without the sponsorship of a bona fide spiritual master, I don't accept anyone. This is what Srinadji told him. So Vitalesh Goswami woke up, and immediately he folded his hands and he said, "Bhakta tapanivarakaya namaha." That means, "I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord who removes the suffering of his devotees." Then he got on his horse and he went to Govindakund. Meanwhile, Raskan is sitting there fasting for 3 days, and he looks up and he sees, he could intuit from Paramatma in his heart, he could also understand this person is coming, somehow there's a connection here, I'll solicit him. So he went to Vitalesh, he very respectfully offered his obeisance, and he said, "Prabhu, I know that you must be having some connection with this temple." And the Bridge Pasha, they wrote, "Waha mene mehbub rehte hain." That means, "That's where my sweetheart lives." That's what it means. So Vitalesh Goswami smiled and he said, "Okay, take your bath, put on some tilak and some tulsi mala and come back here and I'll speak to you about it. I'm just now going to wake the deity and I'll come back." So he did that. He changed his clothes. He dressed like a Hindu and he put on some tilak. And Vitalesh Goswami came back and gave him initiation and said, I know about you because Krishna has told me. So he said, "You can go now. Next to Arati, when Arati comes after the offering, then you can go up with the crowd of pilgrims. They will let you in." And that's what happened. The crowd of pilgrims came in. This time he mingled in with them a little bit better because he was dressed like a Hindu. And he when he was ready to step into the temple room through the threshold of the door, again, another arm comes down and stops him. But this time the arm was blue. And Krishna took him by the hand and said, "You're my eternal associate, and I want you to stay here and worship me every day. I know you're a good poet." He was a poet, Raskan. So he said, "I want you to compose beautiful devotional poems in my language, Brijbhasha, for my pleasure, and you can worship me in this way for the rest of eternity." Raskan was in complete bliss, because he was, after all, a Daivi Jiva. So he said things like, "Dhuri bhare ati sobhita shyamaju, taisi bani sirasundara choti." That means, how nicely he's dressed by his mother with pearls binding his top knot and peacock feather. Even though his form is completely covered with dust, it's still shining with spiritual ecstasy. Pure blue, satchit ananda vigraha. Fat limbs, Krishna in his balroop. So, what a kelata kate fire angana. You're wearing a nice yellow bagal bandi and your feet have jingling ankle bracelets on them. When you walk, it makes jingling sound. And you're not eating and you're not playing. But you know how children are. When you give them something to eat, they walk around with it and play for an hour or so. They don't really take either one seriously. In the courtyard, you're eating and not eating at the same time, playing. Pirikachoti, Vachavi Kora Sakana Bilokata, Varata Kama Kalani Tikoti. 1,000 cupids are instantly vanquished when I see beauty like this. kalaniti koti tahi ahira kicho hariyan. That is what is it? Kage bhag kaha kahiye harihatason le gayo makhan roti. So then what shall I say of the good fortune of that crow who suddenly swooped down and took the buttered chapati out of your hand? This is prasadam, causeless mercy. So the Lord may sometimes give his mercy to someone who is even the most unlikely candidate. We cannot guess what is going on. I mean, certainly that's been my experience. I grew up in this neighborhood, no idea of Krishna. And somehow or other, Rukmini Dwarkadish pulled me here, and I'm sitting here today. Swarup Goswami prays in his Padyavali, I've been seized by the thrashing crocodile of profound threefold miseries within the water of material existence, full of accumulated misconceptions. I'm crying out of inner fear. Using your shining Sudarshan disc that rejuvenates even the demigods, please now deliver this Gajendra of my consciousness, which is besieged by unrelenting anxiety. He continues, pulled into isolation by boundless currents of illusion, I'm drowning amidst obvious and diverse obstacles within the surging sea of material existence. O friend of the shelterless, moon of mercy, this time kindly extend your supportive hand to me without delay. No one is more supremely merciful than you, and no one is more pathetic than me. Considering this, O Lord of the Yadus, please do whatever is appropriate. There's much, much more that we can say here. Archita Prabhu asked me to speak something about Vrindavan, so maybe I can just add one more thing. Bijam mukti toro ranarthapatali nistarakam tarakam dhama prema rasasya vanchita dhura samparakam parakam etad yatra navasinam udayate chitchakti vritti dvayam mahnatu vyasanani maturapuri sa vashriyam chakriyat. That means that the seed of liberation, that thing which destroys all sorts of a succession of anarthas, a succession of illusions and misconceptions and ugly habits and material desires, and all these things are called anartha. So that which delivers us is called taraka. And that which takes us and puts us into a position of transcendental premarasa within the holy dham of Krishna, that's called paraka. So you have two things. One gives you liberation, one gives you love of God. They're called taraka and paraka. Etad yatra nivasinam udayate chitchakti vritti dvayam. Both of these arise spontaneously just by placing yourself within the holy realm of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So how can I possibly begin to calculate what is the tremendous mercy of Sri Vrindavan Dham? He goes on to say, Vitidati mura mardana prabhuste nahi bhajamana janaya yam kadapi vitarasi bata bhakti yogame tam tava mature mahima girama bhumi. O Mathura, you give devotional service to your Lord Muramardhan and Krishna, which even though he rarely gives this, even to those who ardently worship him, Krishna rarely gives this bhakti to them. But all one has to do is exist within Vrindavan, and you automatically give him this love of Godhead, whether he does any bhajan or not. So who can calculate your glory? Finally, one more verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because our access to the holy realm of Vrindavan is coming through His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is representing the boundless mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, He lo dhunita khedaya vishadaya pranmiladamodaya shamyat chastra vivadaya rasadaya chittarpitonmadaya shashvat bhakti vinodaya madaya samadaya madhurya maryadaya. Sri Chaitanya Dayanidhe Devadaya Bhuyada Mandodaya. That means, O ocean of mercy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, let there be an awakening of your auspicious mercy, which easily drives away all kinds of material lamentation, by making everything pure and blissful. Indeed, your mercy awakens transcendental bliss and covers all material pleasures. By your auspicious mercy, quarrels and disagreements arising from different scriptures are vanquished. Your auspicious mercy pours forth transcendental mellows and thus causes the heart to jubilate. Your mercy, which is full of joy, always stimulates devotional service and glorifies conjugal love of Godhead. May transcendental bliss be awakened within my heart by your causeless mercy. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions or comments? Bhrigupati Prabhu. Microphone.
Thank you for a uniquely wonderful class. Really appreciate that. So I have three questions, and I'll see how lucky I am. I'll try to start with the first one. When there's a Broadway play, you've probably been to Broadway plays, one or two. So, you know, there's dialogue between the players, and at some point they break out into a song. You know?
Yeah.
And then all the emotion comes in and the whole mood change. So were you suggesting in your little comment there about the...
That's exactly what I'm suggesting. It's not only in the Bhagavatam, but it's especially in vernacular literatures.
Hmm.
And in fact, this thing has reincarnated now into Hindi movies as well. You cannot sell a Hindi movie unless you have song and dance every so often. And even though modern movies have become basically as demoniac as movies in the West, they've retained the same format. So that just goes to show that when you try to modernize an ancient civilization according to Western standards, you never actually succeed 100%. You come up with something hybrid, and quite often it's even worse, like Kolkata or Mumbai or Delhi. It's completely urbanized, and you've got as many homeless people, maybe even more homeless people than Los Angeles or New York or Chicago. But it just becomes a weird sort of hybridized humanity that's very strange. But yeah, this is a common literary
device.
Yeah, device. And it's assumed that these things have been performed in the past. Because before we had movies, people had sangeeta, which means dance, music, and literature all in one. There's a visual element that's very attractive. There's a musical element, also attractive. And then there's the ideas that are expressed, which should also be very ennobling and devotional and also attractive.
Just like, is this idea coming from Acharyas? I mean, this is not your idea, is it?
This is coming from the Natya Shastra.
Uh-huh.
The story is that one day the devas all approached Lord Brahma and said, you know what, we're all devotees, we're pious, but we also have material desires. We want to enjoy things in this world. So can you please give us some sort of diversion that, you know, we won't degrade ourselves with? Instead, we can make advancement through that. And Brahma arranged for this Natya, science of Sangeeta, to be delineated through the mouths of sages such as Bharat Muni, who wrote the Natya Shastra. In the beginning of the Natya Shastra, if you read a translation of that work, you can find the story is there.
I just want to see if I'm understanding you correctly. Would it be correct to say then that the Bhagavatam could be performed and it would be bona fide?
Yes. In fact, I was at a performance of Pandit Jasraj many years ago in Houston, Texas. He's probably one of the most famous singers in North Indian classical music. And he made a comment at that time that if you remove Krishna, then 90% of North Indian classical music has been erased. And that's a fact not only with music. It's a fact with the plastic arts. It's a fact with the visual arts. It's a fact with the performing arts of all sorts. I mentioned dance already. Literature as well. There are many just like Shishupalavad. One poet wrote a book on the killing of Shishupal. It's not necessarily a devotional shastra of any sort, but it's a literary discussion of Krishna's killing Shishupal. The idea being that as long as the subject matter is ennobling, then one can make advancement, even if the process is essentially sense gratification. And this is a very important point, because we live in a culture that is dedicated entirely to sense gratification. So unless we somehow dovetail that, as Prabhupada said, then Maya will remain with all the toys. And by default, we will take an Islamic approach, which is to deny the senses altogether. I mean, that's the Abrahamic approach generally. But the Shastic approach is to recognize that all these things exist as functions of Yogamaya.
How come Prabhupada never mentioned? I mean, this is fascinating to me. Because
I believe Prabhupada does mention this extensively.
So
you have to be looking for it, because it's not necessarily so explicit as I've made it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. I mean, this is the principle. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti. Cultural conquest is another famous quote. He encouraged devotees to do these things. Just like I had a god sister, Shata Arupa, so Prabhupada was encouraging her to dance in the temple for the deity in Vrindavan. Until 40, 50 years ago, this was the standard. Even 30 years ago when I went, there were some kataks attached to each of the major temples of Vrindavan. So, otherwise, Prabhupada said, if they don't come to the temple and see these things, then necessarily they go home and watch videos. And how many of them are godly? You have to look hard to find a 50-year-old movie that's devotional. Isn't it? Nimai Nadiyar Nimai. It's a 50-years-old movie, maybe more than that. Is that okay? Anything else?
If nobody else.
I'm not seeing hands.
Well, just a small point. You're mentioning, you know, glorification of Vrindavan. And it was sounding like, well, you made the point that if somebody just goes and exists in Vrindavan, then they receive both Taraka and Paraka, which is deliverance, liberation, and actually love of God. So, you know, when you hear something like that, it immediately makes you feel like, well, let me go to live in Vrindavan. I mean, what am I waiting for? Let me get
And
over
in
it.
Fact, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur has written a book that's many, many, many volumes, hundreds of verses on this very topic. He says, just forget everything, go to Vrindavan now.
Okay, so here's my question. But like you hear a statement, the first thing when you're saying that, the first thing that rings in my ears is Prabhupada said, well, Vrindavan is for inspiration only. That's a bona fide statement from Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah, this is a very good point. This is the other side, which in fact Srila Prabhupada generally stressed, we should note. Srila Prabhupada stressed that you should not live in Vrindavan until you're very old and very advanced. Generally, this was his advice. You can spend some time there regularly. That's very good. But to retire in Vrindavan, it's mainly for elderly people and for advanced devotees, because it's a very, very intimate, very, very advanced position to be in. And the risk is always of committing offenses. If we commit offenses in Vrindavan, then it's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of times worse than anywhere else. Therefore, many devotees go to Mayapur instead, because in Mayapur, these offenses are not considered so much by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which we've described.
Is the benefit the same?
The benefit is the same, because the dhams are not different. The dhams are just like the only difference between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna himself is the color. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also infused with the Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam, Naomi Krishna Swarupam. He's infused with the attitude and the complexion of Srimati Radharani, although he's Krishna himself. Similarly, his dham, it is Vrindavan. What is that? Gaura Brajavani Bhedo Na Dekhibo Hoibo Brajavasi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the person who sees no difference between Navadvip Dham and Sri Vrindavan Dham, that person has already become a Brajavasi.
Dhamerashva Rupa Spuri Be Nayane Hoibo Radharadasi.
In that condition, a person will see the real Dham, and which is to say that that Dham will reveal itself to such a person, and he'll become a servant of Srimati Radharani. So it's something we should take very cautiously. This is a fact. Prabhupada was always warning us like that. And a further point is that another distinction, if there is a distinction between Vrindavan and Mayapur, Mayapur represents, whereas Vrindavan is Madhurya Dham, Mayapur is Audharya Dham, the dham of giving. That's why the offenses don't matter, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to just give this thing free. So those devotees who identify more with that, then they also want to manifest this mood and stay out of Vrindavan for the purpose of giving to others. And this is what Prabhupada did until the last several months of his life. He was constantly traveling and preaching. That's another point. Okay? Gaura Chandra Prabhu.
So can you mention something about how we see other dhams, like New Dwarka Dham and other temples all over the world?
Vanam tu sattviko vaso gramo rajasa uchyate tamasam dyuta sadanam manniketam tu nirgunam. Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto, residence in a forest is considered to be in sattva guna. Residence in a city is passionate. Residence in a brothel or a bar or a gambling den, that is tamasic. But residence in my temple, that is transcendental to all three gunas. So it doesn't really matter whether we live in Vrindavan or any other place. If we are absorbed in Vrindavan, if we are absorbed in the consciousness that characterizes Vrindavan, if we are engaged in pure devotional service, then it makes no difference. And Krishna's temple, for sure, is always in that same transcendental platform. This temple is also Vrindavan Dham. There's no difference. But as I said, in Vrindavan, the access is available. Therefore, it's called Tirtha. Tirtha means a portal, a place from which you access another realm from this one. You step through. Just like they have the story of the yogis. I mean, I actually saw this once. A yogi. He came out of the water of the Ganga. I mean, I didn't see him going into the Ganga. I only saw him coming out of the Ganga. The idea is that yogis, they travel from one place to another through the Ganga, because the Ganga flows in all the planetary systems. So a person who's really an accomplished yogi, he can enter the Ganga at Kolkata, and, you know, within a short period of time, he can exit the Ganga at Haridwar. I don't know if that's what happened or not. But the idea is that, you know, these things are transcendental. The tirthas are also transcendental. And although the temple is always Vrindavan, still there's this characteristic of Taraka Paraka and Audharya that we mentioned already in Vrindavan and Mayapur respectively. So those things should be considered, and that's why we should visit. Okay? Yes.
Just on that point of the yogis, Prabhupada mentioned, but, you know, they're traveling. Prabhupada mentioned that in the lecture. I can't remember if he mentioned the actually sort, but he definitely confirmed that he mentioned Rameswar, Rishikesh. I can't remember the third place, but the yogi dips in one place and then the next second he's popping up another. Mm. So, question: you gave that story and you mentioned about Raskhan, was his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the idea was that, you know, it was an example of how somebody gets the causeless mercy. Somebody completely unqualified gets the causeless mercy.
Mm.
But as the story unpacked, as you like to use that word, it sounded like he did have some qualifications. Because, you know, he was a bhakta. I mean, he started off as a
Daivi Jiva, it says. But from our perspective, this is the thing, we judge based on our limited calculation, and that is offensive. So we have to be careful of that, because you never know who you're sitting next to. And there's a nice doha in Hindi, they say, Tulasi isa sangsara mein sabse mili abhai. Na jane kis rup mein, narayana mila jai. That means you should be nice, basically you should be nice to everybody, because you never know in what form you're going to meet Narayana. The idea is that, you know, there are great souls, and they do not necessarily appear in what our own stereotype conception of a great soul should be. That's the point. And throughout the Bhagavatam, we find this again and again and again.
Yeah. In the early part of the lecture, you made this point about how, you know, talking about the independence of Krishna, and how ultimately all the opulence Krishna has is just there as a facility to exchange, you know, to engage in loving relationships with the devotees. It's there so the devotees
can. That was Sridhar's Swami, I believe.
Okay, you know, Krishna can offer these things to the devotees, and they more appreciate that Krishna's so kind, Krishna's so wonderful. He's given this to me, and vice versa, when the devotees give, you know, they use it as an opportunity. So my question is this then, because one thing that ordinary people struggle with is the idea, how could God possibly be omnibenevolent? You know, somebody, you might say, well, maybe, you know, omnipotent, yes or no. Omniscient, yeah. But omnibenevolent, no way, because look at what's going on here today. So, but would this be a correct understanding then, that whatever's happening to any jiva at any point in time, it's actually part of an arrangement by Krishna to bring that person to pure devotional service? You know, even like the Jews being rounded up and put in concentration camps and killed, even all what's happening to all the animals today who are being cruelly and inhumanely tortured and slaughtered like that, is it all part of, that'd be a correct understanding, that somehow or another it's all part of a plan of Krishna to bring the jiva to pure devotional service, as inscrutable as, use that word, as it might seem to be.
The point here is that, again, it's actually the same point, that we cannot apply our own limited conceptions to things that are essentially beyond it. Achintya khalu ye bhava natans tarkena yojayet, Mahabharata says. We have our conception that all these people are innocent, or all these, you know, just like now we have species extinction going on at an epidemic rate as well, or rainforest depletion, or even ozone depletion, and all these things, we're destroying our environment on an unprecedented scale, and it looks as if there's, I mean, if someone or some even class of living beings are just exterminated like this, it seems they're innocent and they're just being wronged. And in one sense, that's correct, because it is no one's dharma to exterminate an entire species or even a large number of people, just like these genocides that happen. I mean, it goes on in Africa all the time and never gets reported. But when it happens in Europe, then it's in the history books forever. But the point here is that we don't necessarily understand the entire scope of the situation, the entire history of each of the jivas that are involved. We don't understand the strategy that the Lord has employed in making history play itself out the way that it does. We don't understand the Lord's mercy because we don't understand what it means to be conditioned. Actually, we don't understand any of these things. I was thinking about these seven or eight adjectives given here. We don't really understand any of them. We don't understand vigunam because we don't even understand how the modes work, ultimately. We don't understand distress because we don't understand, I mean, none of these things are very clear to us. So how can we calculate or judge that this is appropriate and that's inappropriate? Therefore, we just hear from the Shastra. The Shastra says that Krishna is Parama Karunika. He is supremely merciful. And we accept that you cannot filter it through the system of the mundane mind. It will just obscure the picture. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay. Microphone.
try to bring a change in our own way or do something about it?
This is a very good question. The question... Yeah, repeat.
Yeah, what I asked was then, should we become callous to what's happening and what's wrong? We clearly see that, like, slaughtering and things that are so extreme, then should we become callous to those things, or should we do some initiative?
You have to do something, but you have to understand what you can do also. And let me explain. When I first read the Bhagavad Gita, I was appreciating all the beautiful BBT artwork within the Bhagavad Gita. And it came to this picture. There's, you know, the Krishna says, the wise person laments neither for the living nor the dead. And it shows this saintly person just kind of walking past a person who's, you know, in some kind of destitute situation. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we just blow it off. I mean, we can't. A sentient being, a person who has feelings and compassion and empathy and sympathy, cannot ignore the sufferings of another person. So in that sense, the answer is no, we should not just ignore the suffering. But then the more important half of the answer is that we have to know exactly how to most strategically direct our compassion. And our compassion also has to be based on real knowledge rather than sentiment. Or as I said with him, we have to be, if we cannot be informed of what the entire scope of the problem is, which we can't usually, then at least we have to be aware of that limitation and work in cognizance of that limitation. And that means that our efforts to relieve suffering have to be guided by transcendental wisdom. And that's actually what Bhagavad Gita is intended to supply. Because as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understands Bhagavad Gita, we're actually supposed to do good for all others. Sarva bhuta hite rata is a phrase that Krishna uses more than once in Bhagavad Gita. It means doing welfare, engaged in the welfare of all living beings. We have to do that. But we have to know how to do that, and it's not an easy thing. It takes a great deal of empathy, which is a gift from above. It takes the discretion that is born of very, very careful and deep study of the scriptures. It takes the inspiration that the Association of Advanced Devotees provide us. And more important than anything else, I think it takes a great deal of purity of one's own motive and understanding of exactly what we can do. What we can do is having... Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what is that? Janma sarthak kari karo para upakar. Bharata bhumite hoilo manusha janma jar janma sarthak kari karo para upakar. Especially those who are born in India, he says, they have the obligation to make themselves perfect and then do good for others. So we have to make ourselves perfect first, and then, on the basis of the Krishna consciousness that we have developed through divine grace, we can actually begin to help other people by awakening them to the knowledge and the process of bhakti, which will eliminate so many sufferings. The initial result of practicing even sadhana bhakti alone, what to speak of bhava bhakti or prema bhakti, the initial result of only practicing sadhana bhakti, that is, following the rules and regulations of chanting and hearing, etc., the initial result is two. Does anyone know what they are? Shubhada and kleshada. Kleshagna, it destroys sufferings and it confers auspiciousness. These things happen as soon as anybody takes to devotional service. And we can experience that directly because it happens in the beginning stage. One is immediately freed from so much suffering. So at least with that realization, we can go out and share Krishna consciousness with other people and bring them to the same level of freedom from miseries. That's something that any one of us can do right now. And therefore, devotees put so much emphasis on distributing books about Krishna consciousness. Because we know from our own personal experience in our own lives that this wisdom elevates us above so many needless and superfluous sufferings. Is that okay? Spiritual wisdom is the best way to direct any effort at helping other people because it's properly guided with respect to its actual knowledge. Other endeavors are quite often based in ignorance, and so they don't really help, and sometimes they're even badly motivated as well. Everybody knows when you give money to some relief fund or something, most of it is taken up by the bureaucrats and never actually gets to the people that it's intended for. Especially in India, it works like that. I know. I live there. Is that okay? Anything else? Otherwise, it's getting late, so we need to stop now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.